Can't forget what you don't know. Final chapter. Welcome to Hidden Agenda on Grand Forks Best Source, everybody. David Waterman with Midwest Public Health Coalition in the studio, along with myself and Paul, the producer. Your show today brought to you by Executive Properties. Are you still putting off that project around the house that's been bugging you forever? Do you think you can wait until spring and call a contractor and have the work done ASAP? Well, good luck with that. Executive Properties has openings right now to get that project done. In fact, you can check out their Google reviews. Aaron says Chris and his team did a spectacular job on the damage to my aunt's garage and siding. Kept us up to date on the progress, and the finished product was amazing. Thank you for your professionalism and hard work. Hey, get that project done sooner than later. Call Executive Properties, 701-330-1273. All right, speaking of phone numbers, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to text or call us. Our number here at the studio, 701-213-0863, 701-213-0863. And after about 10 minutes of the show, we will be taking it off Facebook and YouTube because, well, we're sick and tired of getting in trouble, all right? So after about 10 minutes, you might have to go somewhere else to find the show, but we're going to be off of YouTube or Facebook. All right. Before we get going any further, let's do it. Let's see if we don't get in trouble for this one. Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. It's our daily segment. Here we go. You know, Trump's wall won't matter. People will still find a way to cross the border. You know, there's a reason why they're called Mexicans, not Mexicans. Boy, we'll all get in trouble for that one or not. Or how about this one? If you want to maybe cast stones at ourselves, some say the Mexicans are bordering on the insane. But so what? So are the Canadians. Yeah. All my friends up north. There you go. Let's do it. My little monologue here. First off, like we do every Tuesday, I'll start off with Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe's disapproval rating. As of yesterday, it's 54.4%. His approval rating actually went up a little bit. And again, it depends on who's doing the surveys and the ratings. But his approval rating at 40.7%. Now we compare that to Donald Trump. His approval rating is at 55% right now. Yeah, 5-5. I was reading about some health experts saying now there, and we've been talking a lot about this on Tuesdays, seeing a much larger number of fit and healthy under 45-year-olds getting cancer. It's happening a lot more than ever before. In fact, up by about 20.5% in the last 5 years, mostly in the abdominal area is what they're saying. I don't know, did you hear what Elon Musk said? He said America is toast without a red wave. Yeah, I got that. Here's one that, David, I know you touched on a week or so ago. This is from the Washington Examiner about immigrants, illegals being flown directly into U.S. cities. And I'm thinking, okay, that can't be a whole lot. 386,000.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a whole lot. And also, the Biden administration, I found this out today, they failed to file the proper paperwork on 200,000 immigrants. So their cases were dismissed. Just, go ahead. That's 586,000 people right there. 586 folks. That's over a half a million. That's a lot of illegals.
That's a lot of illegals.
Yeah. How are you, by the way?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm probably spoiled beyond description.
Really?
That's the fact.
Yeah, please explain to me.
Well, we live in, you know what? I've said it before. Anytime you can walk into a room, hit a switch and light comes on.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn knob and hot and cold water that's drinkable comes out. You can walk into a room, close the door, and take care of all your bathroom facilities needs.
Mm-hmm.
You can step out of the house, open another door, close the door, turn a key, and then shift and drive wherever you want.
Yep.
I mean, these are
if you can afford to do all of those.
Right. Unparalleled freedoms that we have. I mean, kings, we're going to talk about a king, King Ahasuerus, also known as King Xerxes, 2,500 years ago. They couldn't even have imagined the kind of luxury that we live in. And I think it's made us really lazy. If you look at the trends, for example, I was just thinking this morning about what makes things popular. Who are the trendsetters? What makes trends in clothing or in personal grooming and styles? And it used to be things that made a person look good, right? Things that because we used to have an eye for beauty. what sense trends today? People going to work in their, you know, t-shirt and jeans, not shaving. So you've got the, you know, a couple of days of stubble.
Yep.
Going to Walmart in your pajamas.
Sounds like me. These are.
So no offense. There's nothing wrong with relaxation, right? We all need to relax. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to just chill out and say, "Hey, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do this." But when it bleeds over into everyday life, work life, society. I mean, look, you're clean shaven. You got some, you know, you got the mustache going on. But these trends these days are set by laziness.
Yeah,
that's all it is. Mm-hmm. It's in the Bible. It's referred to as sloth.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
The Bible has things to say about sluggards who are slothful people who just, and it's never good.
Mm-hmm.
People are never commended for being lazy and slothful. You know, at one point it says that the sluggard he's got a bowl of food in front of him. He's too lazy even to bring his hand up to his mouth to eat it.
Hey, I even have a brand new pair of socks on today.
There you go.
My Trump 2024 socks. Yeah. How about that? See how many people I can piss off with the hat and the socks today, you know?
I'm hoping. Have you ever seen President Trump show up without shaving to the White House?
No.
Ever seen him in the White House without a suit and tie?
No.
No, he's always dressed. He's ready to work.
3/4 of a can of hairspray. The hair is just it's like got a Snell rating or a DOT sticker on it. It's just, perfect.
You know, he's a man that is used to working. He works.
Yeah.
And there is a major push in this country to get people to think, young people in particular, who don't know how to think for themselves yet, to think you don't have to work. Just the fact
everything's given to you.
The fact that you're alive means you deserve it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, guess what? That's wrong. That's just wrong. You know, the truth of the matter is that we all have God-given rights, things that we are. That are gifts from God, rights that we can say, I have a right to that. I don't have to earn that.
Yeah.
And they're enumerated in the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. You know, we have a right to freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of worship, freedom to go to the government and make a petition and say, hey, I don't think this is right. I don't like the fact that you're doing this. We're going to read about that with Queen Esther in just a little bit, that she made a petition to the king. So, it's important for us to recognize that certain things are not rights. Mm-hmm. We don't have a right to someone else's stuff.
Sure, sure.
So people say, well, I think that people should be able to get free college and have free food. Guess what? You're now saying you have a right to someone else's stuff.
Yeah.
It's that simple, because college doesn't just spring up. It's not a mushroom that shows up after a thunderstorm,
but,
right?
Yeah, and they can't afford to pay back their student loans, but they're down in spring break just hamming it up, you know? It's like, come on, let's go.
So the fact is that if a person can't afford it, that doesn't mean that they deserve for someone else to give it to them.
Sure.
There's very clear instruction in Scripture that if you see someone who's in need and you have the ability to help them, you help them, right? But if you see somebody, on the other hand, who's not willing to work, you don't help them because they have the ability, but they're just not willing.
Right.
Right? So that's if we ran society like that, which it used to be run like that, 100 years ago, everyone expected to work because work is a good thing.
Sure.
You know, work is a good thing. Who invented work?
The person who wanted to live.
Oh, I see what you said. Well, that's the person that does the work, right?
Yeah.
But work was actually given to us by God in the Garden of Eden. God said to Adam, he said, take care of this garden.
Mm-hmm.
Take care of it. It's your, you know. And so when he said, fill the earth and subdue it, subduing doesn't come from sitting around watching television. It involves effort and action, and so that's what God expected Adam to do, and that's what he expects all of us to do the work that we need. And then, of course, sin came into the world and the fall, and now work becomes laborious and tedious and hard and by the sweat of our brow and dealing with thorns and thistles and all that kind of stuff, which we can, obviously, that can be both physical and you know, literal as well as figurative. The when your car breaks down, it's not supposed to, or you have nothing but trouble, or like it is for me every Tuesday morning as I'm trying to get ready for the show. Nothing but trouble. It's, if you had a, you know, some, this would be interesting. If you wanted to stick a camera in my house, in above my desk where I get ready for the show, and just look, watch all the things that go wrong, you'd go, that's not real.
Just need the background music, right? They need the background
music. Exactly. You'd say, there's no way this is real. This has got to be, it's put on. But no, it's real. And so anyway, that's the thing, thorns and thistles. So we all deal with thorns and thistles.
Sure.
One way or another. Morning, Paul.
Welcome. Morning. Say that again.
Good morning.
There we go. All right. Didn't have him on.
Did you guys see that Candace Owens finally quit the Daily Wire?
No.
Yep.
Really?
Because of the conflict between her argument with Shapiro over Palestine.
Oh, boy.
And then she said that she's going to be going to Jerusalem and to Hamas, and she's going to be making like a documentary, which I'm kind of curious why she would go into Hamas and, you know, risk getting her head cut off.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I've not watched her in her debate with Ben Shapiro. What is she saying?
I think she's calling for like the ceasefire.
I see. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. You can be a really smart person and still be confused about something that you don't understand. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't really understand it, and what she doesn't understand is that it's like calling to it would be like this. Let's say that a major gang, MS-13, comes across the border by the thousands, which they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But so let's pretend that's true, and it is. And let's say that they organize a massive attack on New York City, and they're just slaughtering people. And they do that, and then they go back into their little lair, their hiding place at Rockefeller Center, wherever they are.
Really quickly, I think I said Jerusalem and Hamas. I meant Israel and Gaza. Israel and Gaza.
Yeah. I'm like, what?
A little brain fart there.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We got the drift. So now all these people that have murdered these folks in New York, they're hiding out, and the New York police know are there, and so they're going in and they're just arresting everyone that they can. And it's like someone saying, hey, wait a minute, this is not – no, we need a cease and desist on the arrests. We just have to stop arresting these people, because some people are getting arrested that weren't guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but they're harboring them. They're letting them hang out. They're hiding them in their homes. That's called aiding and abetting.
That's
right?
Illegal. Yeah,
that's right.
As long as you know you're doing it,
if you know who did, yeah. So hey, that's not right. No, you don't stop arresting those folks. You know why? Because they're just going to do it again.
Sure.
And Israel knows. In fact, that look, we've said it how many times on this show. The son of one of the founders of Hamas said Israel must destroy Hamas completely, must wipe them out, because Hamas only exists for one reason, and that's to destroy Israel, to wipe out Israel as a nation. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. But so she doesn't understand that. It's not like these are two different, oh, well, they have one political view and they have another political. It's not like that. Hamas has one purpose, and that is to kill every man, woman, and child of Jewish descent.
Yeah.
First in Israel, and then throughout the rest of the world. That's their goal. That's what they want to do. So there's no way to stop fighting the people that already attacked you, that want to destroy you. Stop fighting them for a while. Let's have a seat. Why? So they can regroup?
Right.
That clearly she doesn't understand that. And so people are going to say, well, what about the, you know, civilian casualty? You know what? Here's the tragedy of war. There are always civilian casualties in a war.
Yeah.
There are. As I've mentioned on the show, it's one thing if you're listening to an Israeli ambassador, and the Israeli ambassador says, we're doing our best to limit civilian casualties, even among the Palestinians who hate us. You don't have to love us. We're still going to try to to eliminate as many, to prevent as many civilian casualties as possible. It's one thing if it's an Israeli ambassador saying that or an Israeli spokesman saying that. But when you have a military commander from the United States who is not Jewish, who has worked with the IDF, who's actually been on the ground with them, been in their planning meetings where they're closed door, no one knows what's going on, no cameras, and they hear the Israeli Defense Force making plans to make their next attack, their next incursion, and these Israeli military people are saying, you know, we could do it this way, but if we do that, there are going to be a lot of civilian casualties. So we're not going to do that plan. What if we do it this way? What if we do it this way? And this American, here is these Israeli military men trying to come up with a plan that's going to create the fewest number of civilian casualties.
Yep.
And then he reports that he says, hey, I was there. I heard them talking. I saw them planning, how can we kill our enemies without killing civilians? How can we do that? So I think when that's the case, you know what? I believe that guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't have he doesn't make money by saying that. He's not being paid. He's someone who actually was an observer who heard them making plans and said, how can we keep civilian casualties to an absolute minimum? You want to say, oh, I don't believe him. Okay, fine. You know what? You can believe whatever you want. You can believe the moon is made out of blue cheese if you want, okay? I can't change what you believe. And if you want to just not think, not use your head, that's fine too. It's your life. It's a free country.
One of the arguments that people are making is that that Netanyahu, because he had already known that they were planning an attack, and so he let it happen so that he could start the war.
Yeah, so you can, that's possible, but that's still conjecture, right?
Yeah.
Until he comes out and says, I knew they were going to attack, but I wanted that to happen so that we could attack them back. Look, who was it who allowed, listen, where is Gaza? It's in the middle of Egypt, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Wrong. Gaza's in the middle of Israel.
Well, yeah.
It's right in the middle of Israel. I'm sorry, I was
just. Yeah.
So it's in the middle of Israel. What have people been calling for is we need a two-state solution. What does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. It means let's take a little tiny sliver that currently belongs to Israel that's been shaved down multiple times. It used to be like this.
Yep.
Now it's like this. Let's take that little sliver that belongs to the Jewish people. Let's slice it up again and give a section of it to the Palestinians so that there's the Palestine area and the Jewish area, the Arab area and the Jewish area. That's a two-state solution. That's essentially what they did.
Yeah.
When they gave Gaza to the Palestinians, they said, okay, we'll give you all of Gaza, a beautiful place that they had manicured and they'd made it very fertile. I mean, it was a wonderful place. They growing all kinds of crops and everything and exporting them. It was so fertile that they were exporting the products that they were growing in Gaza. They gave it all. They made every Jewish family leave. As I said on the last show, they even dug up the Jewish graves and moved the grave sites outside of Gaza. So now it's all yours. And what did the people in Gaza do? They elected as their leaders Hamas.
Yeah.
They elected Hamas leaders who, what did they not know that Hamas's goal was to destroy all of Israel? Of course they knew that. But they put them in charge of that entire region.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that region, they planned and planned and planned and built up and made this plan and got all the men that they were going to ready. And on the word go across the border back into Israel and slaughter as many Jews as you can, men and women and children. Oh, and you know what? It's going to be such a great time. Film it. When you're beheading, when you're cutting heads off of babies, film that. Because we want to have a copy of that because that's going to be a great time. And they did. So the film is out, the video is out there.
Yeah.
And the world has seen it. And who does the world blame? Those dirty Jews. Did you see what they're doing now? They're trying to defend themselves. We're an upside down world. We're an upside down world. Hmm? That's exactly what just happened on October 7th. So now we're trying to, I'm trying to bring a little perspective for the show. So I have some. This is probably
wasn't as horrific as January 6th, though.
Oh, nothing will ever be.
Oh, January 6th? Are yeah. you kidding me? January 6th? That's like, that was worse than 9/11.
Yeah, it's got its own word, insurrection.
Insurrection. Ooh. In fact, you know, that guy, Trump, you know what he texted on January 6th, like right after it became known that there's violence mm-hmm. being done in the Capitol? They didn't know. It was the feds doing the violence. But anyway, after the violence started being done, he actually had the gall to tweet out, you know, stay peaceful, no violence,
yeah, yep.
which, as we all know, that's code for do more violence, yeah. right? Yeah. All the MAGA people know that when their leader mm-hmm. says peaceful, no violence, what it means is get more violence.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
And make sure there's cameras around.
Yeah, it's upside down world. Sorry.
Wow. Yeah.
It gets to the point where you say you just want to go. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah. This makes
Looney Tunes music in the background.
You can't even begin to. Mm,
that's all, folks.
Yeah, that's all, yeah. folks. That's right. So so here's the deal. I've got some great pictures to go along with what we're going to be talking about today. Only now I'm getting this message, and I know, Paul, that you said it was working before, but it says, permission to capture denied. Ensure your browser has screen record system permission. So it says go to the Apple menu, system preferences, and guess what? It won't let me choose the system preferences. Do you see system preferences on there anywhere? No, neither do I. So and then click on security and privacy. So anyway, I'm going to get into it, whether this thing is going to work or not. Let's see. Privacy and security here. Let's see. And then what did it say to do next? Select screen recording. Screen recording. There. It's not going to let... Oh, is it Firefox? Okay, sorry.
There you go. Yeah, now click the dot.
What dot? Oh, is it? Thank you. Ah, thank you. Sorry about this. Wait, is it time to go to a commercial break? Yes, it is.
Okay. We can do that. All right. You know... It's nothing better than treating yourself to some good homemade baked goods. That's where Oh for Heaven's Cakes comes in, right here on the north back side of the Grand Cities Mall. Tell you what, doesn't matter if you got a special occasion or just a treat. Best cakes or cupcakes around. Walk in to find out more. The smell will keep you there, though. It's unbelievable. Call them up, find out more. 701-757-CAKE. You can email them, ohforheavenscakes@yahoo.com. Good stuff. They're open Tuesdays through Fridays from 10 to 4, Saturdays 9 to noon. Be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins. Oh, for Heaven's Cakes in the Grand Cities Mall. You know, boy, proms are going on now. Graduation is not that far away. Order your cakes and cupcakes now. Oh, for Heaven's Cakes. Here in the Grand Cities Mall, can't forget what you don't know, final chapter. Welcome to Hidden Agenda with David Waterman with the Midwest Public Health Coalition. Of course, myself and Paul, the producer. And what do we got going on here now?
Thank you. I think this is going to work. Yeah, thank you. That was a great, wonderful. Yes, yes. Okay, good. So let's go back. I'm going to recap. Is that what's live or is that what's live?
Same thing.
Thank you. All right. So last week we talked about how this is a bronze statue of a prophet tearing his garment. So what? Let me just recap. Can we go back to me for just a quick second? Thanks. Sorry. So if you weren't here last week, we started reading from the Book of Esther, which is a historical. You know, we talked about the different people that have tried to wipe out the Jews. People have tried to destroy the Jewish people for thousands of years, and it's still happening today. Why? Why that particular group? Is there any other? You know, I brought some. I left my stuff. I brought some stuff for you guys, and I left it anyway. I didn't bring. I prepared it.
David, getting ready.
I did a lot of preparing. No, it's just weird. It's almost like it's demonic. No matter how hard I try, no matter what I do, So I've got this stuff that it's sitting. I know where it is. Anyway, didn't make it into my briefcase. So we'll just wing it.
Okay.
And well, next week will be part four because there's no possible way we're. I'll do my best. So here's what happened. What we learned last week is that King Ahasuerus, who's also known as King Xerxes, is like 473 AD BC. He had this big banquet. He was he had a little bit, maybe too much a drink. Wanted to have his wife come in, who was very beautiful, and show her off to all his princes and nobles. And she said, "I'm not coming." And then he said, "What am I going to do?" So he calls all his advisors. What do I do with Queen what's her name? Who won't come into the bank? And so they say, "Here's what you do." Make it so that she can't. What's her name? Make it so that she can never. Queen Candace. Just kidding. Vashti. Queen Vashti can no longer come into the king's presence. Mm-hmm. And search out the whole country. Find beautiful young virgins to be brought in, and then you can pick one of them. And he said, "Hey, okay, I like that." So that's what they did. And one of the women was a woman named Hadassah, whose name was changed to Esther. I think that's a Persian name, and she was Jewish, and she was being raised by her cousin Mordecai, and we talked about that. I know I'm just recapping from yesterday, from last week, because some people didn't see last week's show, and so then Mordecai at some point was sitting at the king's gate, and he overhears two guards. Esther becomes the new queen,
mm-hmm.
and Mordecai overhears these two guards plotting to kill the king. And he tells Esther, who tells the king, and he investigates, finds out, yep, for sure, and then these guys are executed. And now we get to the point where there's this guy named Haman, and he's part of the king's royal court, and the king kind of elevates him to a high status, and he's people are told to bow. When he comes down, you bow. It's like a symbol of worship to bow to Haman. And Mordecai, who's Jewish, who only bows before God, won't do it. And people notice, and they tell Haman, and Haman becomes furious. And Haman then goes to the king, and he says, "You know what? Killing Mordecai, he could have Mordecai impaled on a stake, and that would." But he says, "Even that won't make him happy." He finds out that Mordecai is a Jew. And so he says, "The only thing that's going to satisfy me about this insolent Mordecai who refuses to bow down and worship me, I'm going to wipe out his entire nation, his entire people, mm-hmm. his entire race. I'm going to kill all of them. Then I'll be happy." So he goes to the king and he tells him a lie. He says, "Hey, there are these people that," it's partly true, "there are these people that don't obey your laws and don't do your ways, and they're different from us, and they exist all over your kingdom," which is a massive kingdom, as we saw last week. And he says, "Please, king, make it a rule that to just get rid of these people, because it's not good for your kingdom to have them here." And King Ahasuerus says, "Okay, that sounds good." Yeah. So he seals it. He gives him the signet ring and says, "Make such a decree." So Haman has the decree sent all over the country that 12 months from now, you can slaughter the Jews, their families, everything, and take what they own as your spoil, and that we're going to wipe them out completely. That would have essentially been the destruction of the Jewish people. And so so he's happy about that. So they send the messengers out. And when the word gets to Mordecai, you saw the picture on the screen just a minute ago, he tears his clothes and he cries out. And so then he goes to... here's where we left off yesterday. So Mordecai's already saved the king's life. And now the king has issued this decree. Oh, and because it's the law of the Medes and the Persians, once the king issues a decree, and it's written in all the languages mm-hmm. of all the different people, it cannot be revoked. Even the king himself can't say,
"Just
kidding.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Don't do that after all." He can't do that. This is the law of the Medes and the Persians. Once edict has been signed by sealed with the king's ring, that's it. It will remain in place. right? We saw that a couple of weeks ago with Daniel, where the king didn't want to kill Daniel, but he'd already signed this thing, so he had to throw him in the lion's den. Of course, God rescued him. Daniel, of course, was Jewish as well. So Esther, Mordecai, when he learns what's going on, he sends this message back to Esther, and he says, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that. He says, you've got to go and plead to the king for the Jewish people. You, Esther, you're the queen. You've got to go into him and plead for the lives of the Jews. And she says, I can't. He's sitting in his court. He hasn't summoned me for 30 days. Mm-hmm. And if anyone goes in to see the king without being summoned, there's only one law, and that's that they be put to death. So he'll have to kill me. Unless he extends his royal golden scepter to me and touches me with it, then I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she says. I've not been summoned for 30 days. So we pick up from there. And they related Esther's words to Mordecai. They told Mordecai what Esther said. Then Mordecai told them, say this to Esther. And I want you to try to picture this. This is what Mordecai said. Now remember, this is the book that God's name is not mentioned once. Mordecai said, tell her this. Don't think that you in the king's palace can escape more than the rest of the Jews. Don't think you're going to escape. Because if you remain silent at this time, a relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. And you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you've attained royalty for such a time as this. So God isn't being mentioned directly, but can you think of a clearer reference to what Mordecai is saying when he says, who knows that you haven't attained royalty for such a time? In other words, how do you know God didn't put you where you are right now because of what's happening right now? What makes you think that you're not there for this very reason? Which, by the way, I just want to make a point. You know, John, you and Paul, you and me, and you know, everyone who's listening to this podcast, for us to think that that it's an accident that we're here right now at this particular time in history, God doesn't make accidents. I really, truly believe that GFBS exists to provide the kind of service that you do here, letting people know the truth, providing a voice for those who want to get the truth out to the rest of the people. I mean, sure, you've got entertaining stuff as well, but it's certainly during the pandemic, the number of people that were actually speaking out against the lies
mm-hmm.
was very, very small.
Yeah.
It was very small. Now, as you've noticed, we got a bunch of...
They jumped on our bandwagon.
A bunch of joiners. Yeah, mm-hmm. right. So they've gotten on the bandwagon, but we did it first here. So you should be proud of that. So Esther says, he said, okay, tell Mordecai. She's going back and forth with a messenger talking to Mordecai. She says, go and assemble all the Jews who are found in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat anything or drink anything for 3 days, night or day. My maidens also will fast in the same way. And then I'll go into the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. If he kills me, he kills me. We're going to fast for 3 days first. And it doesn't say it here, but I guarantee that wasn't just fasting. It was fasting and praying. So Mordecai goes away and did what he commanded. He called the people. And you know, let's see if we can just... So he put on sackcloth and ashes. Paul, can we just pull up this screen again real quick? And I'm just going to go through a few things from these slides. So they put on sackcloth and ashes. And sackcloth, I'm going to show you. Here's a quick shot of Mordecai. Here's a quick shot of Mordecai tearing his clothes as he's. And then this next picture. Here we go. We'll do it this way. That's sackcloth. This is actually a sackcloth mummy shroud from Egypt with the eye opening. So they put this on, very scratchy stuff. This is Susa. This is the Persian city.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the royal city and the palace of Xerxes. Here's the place. These are the remains as it exists today. And here's the palace. So you can see on the extreme right, Mordecai's approach, there's the king's gate. And that's where he was kind of wailing. No one is allowed to enter the king's gate. go past the king's gate wearing sackcloth and ashes. You've got to be properly clothed. So Esther had sent out clothing to him, and he wouldn't put it on, and so he stays out there. Here's the king's gate, the royal city of Susa, with a moat in between. There you can see the king's gate. The royal palace is over there on the left. The dry moat used to have water in it. The royal city is on the right. And there, and they've now constructed a bridge that would have gone across the moat so you can get into the king's gate. And this is a different land. And so it came about on the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court. Let me see if I've got... The inner court is right here. See that? There's the inner court. She stood in the... Here's the throne hall, right? So that's where King Xerxes would have been sitting. And it happened when the king... So she's taking her life in her own hands. She stood in the inner court in the king's of the king's palace in front of the king's rooms, and the king was sitting on his royal throne in the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. And it happened when the queen saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, she obtained favor in his sight, and the king extended to Esther the golden scepter which was in his hand. So Esther came near and touched the top of the scepter. Let me see if I can show that to you. Let me see here. I've got a picture of it. Nope, that's not it. Hold on. There it is. So that's actually that's a relief of King Darius the First, who we talked about. He's the one that had Daniel thrown in the lion's den. But that's, I believe that that's actually his son standing right behind him. So you can see that scepter he's got in his hand. That's the gold scepter that he extended to Queen Esther, and she touched it. And then the king said to her, "What is troubling you, Queen Esther, and what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it will be given to you." And Esther said, "If it please the king, may the king and Haman come this day to the banquet that I've prepared for him." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly so we can do as Esther desires." So the king and Haman came to the banquet which Esther had prepared. And they, as they drank their wine at the banquet, the king said to Esther, "What is your petition? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to half of the kingdom it shall be done." So that's what he says to Esther. And Esther... Esther is still nervous. So she says, "My petition and my request is... If I found favor in the king's sight, and if it pleased the king to grant my petition and do what I request, may the king and Haman come to the banquet which I shall prepare for them, and tomorrow I'll do as the king says." Another banquet tomorrow. Yes, so Haman. So there it is. And Haman goes out. Haman is thrilled because he's called for the second time to go to a banquet with, I'm going to see if I can find a picture. Oh, okay, it's on my next set of slides. He says, oh, then he sees Mordecai, who doesn't bow before him. And he didn't stand up or tremble before him either. And Haman was filled with anger against Mordecai. Let me see if I can do this. I'm going to try to find that picture. It's the one from last week. Let's see. We'll do this. Open. Here we go. Here we go.
This stuff was all just uncovered.
Yeah, wow.
Pardon me. Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
This stuff was all just uncovered recently?
Some of it was uncovered recently. They recently found all the inscriptions. I mean, recently within archaeological time, that could be 10 years ago, right? But they know now that Susa was there. They know that that's where Susa was. And they've uncovered the foundations of the palace and the inscriptions about Darius and Xerxes. I mean, they've known about that. But the story that's told in the book of Esther in Scripture has been fully verified by everything that they've found as they've uncovered these foundations of his palace. You know, the way that it's laid out, where she stood, where the throne room was, all of those things, archaeologists. Now look, how do they uncover foundations of a palace and understand what's what in that place? Well, there are inscriptions, there are artifacts that let them say, oh, this was the throne room and this was the outer court. And I mean, they have ways of figuring that stuff out, but they figured it out and it matches exactly what the scripture records that happened. And they've got the, you know, they even have wording to, how do they take a clay tablet that's got these little dashes and lines drawn on it and say, oh, that's a language, and then actually figure out what they mean?
Yeah.
But they can do that. I mean, guys way smarter than me who are able to figure that stuff out. And then they read it. They can, so once they figure out the language, how it works, they can actually read the inscription. So I saw one that said, this is the petition to a governor to have the ancient remains of their deceased family members moved from one area to another area because of whatever geopolitical stuff was going on at the time. So they can actually read these things, and so they do that. So here's a picture. Again, this was a Haman and Mordecai by Alexander Leroy in 1884. Of, again, we saw this last week. That's the depiction of Mordecai. Whoops. What's going on here? Oh, it's not. Oh, it's not picking up this new screen. Okay, forget it. So Haman sees Mordecai. Mordecai won't bow before him, and he's filled with anger. But Haman controlled himself, and he went to his house and sent for his friends and his wife, Zeresh. By the way, Haman doesn't have a small house. Haman lives in a palace. This guy is incredibly wealthy, and he's got this massive house. And Haman recounted to them...
His brother Hyman has the little one.
Haman recounted to them the glory of his riches and the number of his sons and every instance where the king had magnified him and how he'd promoted him above the princes of the servants of the king. And Haman said also, even Esther, the queen, let no one but me come to the king, come with the king to his banquet. He's saying, look, you know how great I am, you guys. You know how rich I am. You know how many kids, how many sons I have. That's what he's saying to these people.
Sure.
Haman is a guy with some problems.
Yep.
And then he says, and Esther, Queen Esther, wouldn't let anyone but me go into this banquet. It was just me and the king, just the two of us with this big banquet. So he's in big time bragging mode. And then he says, but none of this satisfies me every time I see Mordecai, the Jew, sitting at the king's gate. That's a quote. Every time I see that Jew sitting at the king's gate, it fills me with rage. So Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends, they say, hey, listen, Mordecai, have a gallows made. Make it 50 cubits high, which 50 cubits, that's 75 feet.
Okay.
And he says, and in the morning, have Mordecai hanged on it. That'll make you happy. And the advice pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made.
Mm-hmm.
He orders the people. They build this huge gallows, 75 feet high. During the night, however, that night, the king couldn't sleep. King Ahasuerus couldn't sleep. I wonder who wouldn't let King Ahasuerus sleep. Again, a reference to the Lord. And so he says, bring in the book of the Chronicles. Bring in the Chronicles. What? That's the records. That's the history of what's been going on during his kingdom. And read them to me, because I need to fall asleep. And so they bring them in. And it just so happens that what was written was about how Mordecai had reported about Bigtha and Bigthana and Teresh, who were going to kill the king, and how Mordecai reported it and saved the king's life. And then the king said, what honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this? What have we done to honor Mordecai for reporting this plot? And they said, nothing's been done for him. Now the king can go. So the king says, who's in the court? And they say, Haman just entered the outer court of the king's palace in order to speak to the king about hanging Mordecai on the gallows. Right? So picture this. Mordecai's, here, let me pull up the outer court again just so we can see this. Mordecai's in the outer court, and he's waiting to go in to see the king and ask him permission to hang Mordecai on the gallows. And the king has just found out that nothing's been done to honor Mordecai for saving his life. So the king's servant says to him, yeah, Haman's in the outer court. He says, the king says, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said to him, this is so rich. The king says to Haman, What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor? He's saying this to the guy that was just boasting about how great he is and how the queen and all the banquet. Okay. And Haman said to himself, whom would the king desire to honor more than me? Then Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king desires to honor, let them bring a royal robe which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed, and let the robe and the horse be handed over to the one whom of the king's most noble princes. Let the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble princes, and let them array the man whom the king desires to honor, and lead him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor. That's Haman's advice.
Mm-hmm.
The king says, Haman, quickly take the robes and the horses you've said, and do this for Mordecai the Jew. Can you imagine the sucking sound you would hear in that room? As Haman tries to catch his breath. I'm sorry, this is so rich. So Haman takes the rope and the horse, and he arrays Mordecai, and he leads him on horseback through the city square, and he proclaims, thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor. Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried home mourning with his head covered. And Haman recounted to Zeresh, his wife, all that happened. And they say, do you know what just happened? And they say, if Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish origin, you will not overcome him, but will surely fall before him. I don't think that's what he wanted to hear either, but that's what his wise men told him. While they were still talking, the king's eunuchs arrived and hastily brought Haman to the banquet, which Esther prepared. So picture this. Haman now realizes he's in deep, deep trouble. And while he's relating this stuff and they're talking about it, the eunuchs show up and grab him and take him back to the palace for the second banquet. Now the king and Haman came to drink wine with Esther the queen, and the king said to Esther the second day as they drank their wine at the banquet, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to half the kingdom it shall be done. Then Queen Esther said, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given as my petition, and my people as my request. For we have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be killed and to be annihilated. Now, O king, she says, if only we'd been sold as slaves, men and women, if that's all that happened, that we were just going to be sold into slavery, I would have remained silent because the trouble would not be commensurate with the annoyance of the king. And the trouble on us to be sold as slaves, that wouldn't equal the annoyance that bringing this matter to you, O king, would cause. But we're set to be annihilated. Then the king Ahasuerus asked Queen Esther, who is he? And where is he who would presume to do this thing? And Queen Esther said, a foe and an enemy is this wicked Haman. Then Haman became terrified before the king and the queen, and the king arose in his anger from drinking the wine and went into the palace garden. Well, the palace garden is there. He goes into the garden, and Haman stays to beg for his life from Queen Esther. So because he saw that he's in big trouble. So here's the palace garden right here. Those are the royal gardens where the king went. And then the king comes back. And when the king comes back, Haman is literally on the couch where Queen Esther is reclining. Haman is down on the couch begging for his life, right, to the queen. And when the king comes back, he sees that Haman is on the couch with Esther, and the king says, will he even assault the queen with me in the house? And as the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face, and they took him out. And then Harbona, one of the king's eunuchs who were there, probably the one that went to get Haman, you know, to bring him back to the palace, to the banquet. He said, Behold, he says, this is the king. He says, behold, the gallows standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, who spoke good on behalf of the king. And the king says, hang him on it. That's pretty simple. Hang him on it. And so they hang Haman on the gallows, which he'd prepared for Mordecai, and the king's anger subsided. But here's the problem. The royal edict is still out there. The royal edict has already been given to destroy all the Jews at the end of the year. And so now it's a couple of months since he issued that decree. People have been gearing up. They've been getting ready. They're identifying who the Jews are, who live in their neighborhoods, and figuring out how they're going to go in and kill them. And so on that day, King Ahasuerus gave the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, to Queen Esther. So his palace basically is now Esther's palace. And Mordecai came before the king, and Esther had disclosed what was what he was to her. So now he says, look, I'm her cousin. And the king takes off his signet ring, which had been taken away from Haman because Haman's hanging on the gallows, and he gave it to Mordecai. The signet ring, by the way, that's the symbol of power of the king. Mm-hmm. And anything he signs with it, that becomes law. So Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet and wept and implored him to avert the evil scheme of Haman, the Agagite, and the plot which he devised against the Jews. And the king extended his golden scepter to Esther, and Esther arose and stood before the king, and she said, if it pleases the king, and if I found favor before him, and if this seems right to you, let it be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote, to destroy the Jews who are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the calamity which shall befall my people, and how shall I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? So King Ahasuerus says, he says to Queen Esther and to Mordecai, he says, behold, I've given the house of Haman to Esther. They've hanged him on the gallows because he stretched out his hands against the Jews. But now I write to you Jews as you see fit. You write to the Jews as you see fit in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet ring. For a decree which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet ring may not be revoked. So he says, you write it. You write it. You figure it out, Mordecai. So the king's scribes are brought in on the third day, and I'm not going to go into all that. And he says, commanded, and Mordecai, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews, that the satraps, the governors, the princes of the provinces, all the people in charge from India to Ethiopia, to every province, according to the script and the language of the people, as well as to the Jews, according to their language, which would be Hebrew, he wrote in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed it with a signet ring, and this is what it basically says. In them, the king granted the Jews who were in each and every city the right to assemble, to defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate the entire army of any people or province which might attack them, including children and women, and to plunder their spoil on the day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, the 13th, day of the 12th month, that's the month Adar, that's the month where they're supposed to kill the Jews. And a copy of the edict was issued as law in each and every province and published so that all the Jews should be ready for this day to avenge themselves on their enemies. And so the couriers go out, they deliver the message, and Mordecai goes out from the presence of the king in royal robes, blue and white, with a large crown of gold. Picture what's going on. Compare it to what Haman's idea of what was going to go on with the Jews. So on the 12th month, so they have a big feast, have a big holiday, and they're rejoicing over the fact that the king has allowed them to push back on his own edict. You know, you got to wonder, here's a king who one day says, go ahead, wipe them all out, destroy them all. And just 2 months later, he says, okay, I changed my mind. All you Jewish people, you can fight back and destroy all the people that are coming against you. And he's basically reversing everything. Not reversing it. He's just saying you have the ability to fight back. So the Jews assembled in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay their hands on those who sought their harm. And no one could stand before them, for the dread of them had fallen on all the peoples. This isn't new in scriptural history either. The dread, the tremendous fear of these people, because one way or another, either directly or indirectly, they realize that these are the people of God, that God is the one that has their backs, and they know that they can't fight against God. And so guess what happens? Even though the plan was made and to allow the destruction of the Jews, Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. Thus the Jews struck all their enemies with the sword, killing and destroying, and they did what they pleased to do to those who hated them. And in Susa, the capital, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. And Parshandatha and Dalphon and Aspatha and Portha, all these other cities, all these other provinces, the 10 sons of Hamadatha, the Jews, the enemy, they didn't lay their hands on the plunder, but they killed the Jews. On that day, the number of those who were killed in Susa reported the king. King said to Queen Esther, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and the 10 sons of Haman in Susa, the capital. What then have they done in the rest of the provinces? And then it goes on, and it turns out that they ended up killing 75,000 people who hated them and were planning to destroy the Jews. So this was done on the 13th day of the month Adar, the 14th day. They rested and made a day of feasting and rejoicing. And they call that feast Purim because at the end of the show, I won't finish the whole thing, but essentially they cast lots and the lot is called Pur. Therefore, they call these days the days of Purim because after the name Pur. And Ahasuerus laid tribute on the land of the coastline. Anyway, this is what happens when a plan is made to destroy God's people, the Jews. It not only doesn't work, it comes back on the heads of those people who want to destroy them.
Easiest show I've ever done. I'm used to talking.
It wasn't surprising. Well, I know that's because I left my other stuff. I had some challenges for you that I wrote up. But anyway, so you might ask... You might say, well, yeah, but David, this is all Old Testament stuff, right? This is stuff that happened, 473 BC. But after Jesus and after the crucifixion? Wasn't it the Jews that killed Jesus? Actually, there was a priest. It was about AD 150, about 150 AD, that a priest actually came out with the idea of what they call deicide, and he blamed the Jews for killing Jesus. And so here's the problem with that, and it's gone on ever since then. So there are people even in the church that think that somehow the Jews are the enemy. Here's what Exodus 19:5 says: Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, he's talking to the nation of Israel. This is God speaking directly to the Jewish people. You shall be my treasured possession among all people of the earth, for the whole earth is mine. What do you think that means when God says to a certain group of people, you will be my treasured possession? That's God talking to this group of people. You're going to be my treasured possession. It says the same thing in King James. That was the ESV. Does the New Testament address this at all? Yes, it does. The Apostle Paul. I'm gonna try to make this really quick because I really wanted this to be the wrap up. But here's what Paul says to the Romans in his letter to the Romans. In Romans chapter 10, he says, "Brethren," and he's talking about Israel. He's talking about the Jewish people, who, by the way, for the most part, don't accept Jesus as the Messiah. There are Jews who do believe that Jesus was the Messiah that's promised in the Old Testament. Most of them, at this point, don't. Here's what Paul says. My heart's desire, my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not in accordance with knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own by obeying the Mosaic law, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone who believes. For there's no distinction, I'm shortening this, there's no distinction between Jew and Greek. Paul just said it. There's no distinction when it comes to salvation, when it comes to becoming going to heaven, being saved. There's no distinction between Jew and Greek. Everybody's got to get saved the same way. It's by trusting in the Messiah. That's Jesus. For the same Lord is Lord of all, abounding in riches for all who call on him. For whoever will call on the name of the Lord will be saved. But surely, I say, Israel did not know. Did they? Did Israel know about this? For first, Moses says, I'll make you jealous by that which is not a nation. By a nation without understanding, I'll anger you. This is a prophecy about against Israel. He's saying, by a nation, another nation, which is not really a nation. He's referring to all the Gentiles, all the non-Jews in the world. He says, I'm going to make you jealous. And Isaiah is very bold to say, I was found by those who did not seek me. That's the Gentiles. I became manifest to those who did not ask for me. But as for Israel, he says, all day long, I stretched out my hands to a disobedient and obstinate people. I'm saying this for the Jew haters who happen to be watching the show. Anybody that considers themselves a Christian and hates the Jews, the people that God loves. Let me ask you, John, here's where it's going to get tough. What if a guy came to you and said, man, John, I love your show. Every show you do, I'm on it. I'm listening. I listen to you when you're on the radio. I watch on GFBS all the time. You're just the coolest guy. I can't stand your wife. I have no idea why you married her. If it was up to me, you'd just get rid of her. How would you respond to someone like that?
I wouldn't. I don't care. I mean, she's got nothing to do with anything here. So.
No, but I'm saying if there was somebody that tells you what a great guy you are and then turns around and tells you what an idiot your wife is, how would you feel towards that person?
I don't know.
Okay, let me go to Paul. Paul.
Okay, we got a guy waiting for you too now, remember. Okay.
I know that. Okay. So Paul, we say to Paul, Paul, you're the best. You're the best. Your wife and kids, I wish they were all dead. How would you react to somebody that said that to you?
Well, I would know that he doesn't like me if he doesn't like my family.
Well, thank you. I mean, how can you? How could somebody say that they're a huge fan of yours and then hate your family? So how can somebody say they love God and hate God's children? Hate the ones that God said, you're my treasured possession. So this is what, and people say, oh no, God rejected the Jews after the crucifixion of Jesus. He rejected the Jews. They're not his people anymore. Here's what Paul says in Romans 11. This is very short. I say then, God has not rejected his people, has he? May it never be, for I too am an Israelite, a descendant of Abraham of the tribe of Benjamin. God has not rejected his people whom he foreknew. Is there anything difficult to understand about that?
Nope.
God has not rejected. Okay, so what's going to happen in Gaza? What's going to happen in Israel? How is this whole thing going to end up? Is it going to be the destruction? The Bible warns us that someday every single nation will be against Israel. They're not going to succeed in destroying Israel because God said it's not possible. He won't allow that to happen. It's been going on for more than 2,500 years. It's still going on today. Different names, different faces, same place. But it won't end well for those people who hate the people of whom God said, they are my treasured possession.
All right.
There it is. So what does it mean you can't forget what you didn't know? Remember when we quoted the guy who said, people who forget history are condemned to repeat it. We're going to see the repetition of history with regard to Israel all over again. But you can't forget what you don't know. I think it's important to know history so that you can go, hey, you know, maybe attacking the nation of Israel is not such a good idea. These people who are doing it, they don't know history. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
By the way, Hidden Agenda brought to you by Redemption Shield.
Have you noticed the ever-alarming 400,000 cell towers that have gone up in the United States alone? How about the electronics that reside in every room of our homes and Wi-Fi that runs 24/7? 5G cell phones are carried in our pockets hours on end. Common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, palpitations, headaches, memory loss, and so much more. Redemption Shield is on the cutting edge of offering products that protect your family from electromagnetic and microwave radiation. Start protecting yourself now. Go to redemptionshield.com and get grounded and shielded today. Use code GFBS and save 10%.
All right, just go to gfbestsource.com, and at the bottom of the homepage, and you can click the shield to order today from Redemption Shield. Again, thank you to David Waterman with Midwest Public Health Coalition, Paul the producer, for your Hidden Agenda show today. Let's see, Grand Forks City Chatter is on at 1 o'clock this afternoon, not that far away. Actually, Grand Forks City Councilwoman Tricia Lunsky will be on the show today. Should be a good one. Tomorrow, Grand Forks County Sheriff Andy Schneider stops in for a bit. We're going to find out what's happening with him and his unbelievable staff. Man, they got a great staff over there. Looking forward to talking to Sheriff Schneider tomorrow. Make sure to tune in, all right? And make sure to like, share, tag, and follow us. Hit that notification bell on your smartphone. It rings every time we go on the air. You never miss a show that way. Pretty cool stuff. And we know the Grand Cities are grand. Grand Forks Best Source is giving them an identity again.